Pat McDonald, for the first time in a long time, we are talking about a brand new movie in theaters.
That's right.
Right now, as people are watching this on Friday.
As we speak.
It's called Hard Miles, and it is not a hard movie to love. It's a very easy,
easy movie to love.
And, yeah. You know, it's one of those things when you mentioned it to me, and then we were able to watch it via a screener link. I know you had seen it some time ago at the Chicago International Film Festival.
Right.
I wasn't really aware of it. And then after it was over, I was like, where can I see this? And it turns out it's everywhere. It's opening in, like, you know, wide release. So
yeah, fairly wide, but you know, check your local listings.
It's at like 5 AMCs here in Chicagoland. So I consider
that wide. That's a pretty good release.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But yeah, I guess my enthusiasm is bubbling over. So it's a big recommend to me. For me to watch, for folks to go out and see this on a big screen. My biggest disappointment is that, I mean, it's a smaller movie, so it's not going to get an IMAX release. But damn it, this movie should be seen on like a mega screen. It's gorgeous.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was thinking that again. I saw it on a bigger screen recently, and the first time I saw it was on a screener link on online. So I got more of an appreciation for the scope of his vision. This is the director, R.J. Daniel Hanna. And he really has a real nice visual sense for what he was doing with, let's face it, five guys riding in a line.
Yeah, I mean, it's an inspirational story, as we were kind of talking before we started recording. It is in that genre of, you know, when I was watching it initially, the phrase that popped into my head is this movie is kickstand and deliver. It's the world weary teacher who gets a team.
Good
of,
one.
Well, thank you. But a team
That's
of
excellent.
Wayward. Yeah. Thanks. That's going in the thumbnail, by the way. Gets a team of kind of wayward youth who are part of this. It's a school in Colorado for troubled kids called the Ridgeview School, and
it's a juvenile center,
right? But and they're all the guys in there. It's a boys' school. Everyone wears uniforms, but there's no shortage of trouble and fights and mischief. And the opening scene is Matthew Modine playing Greg Townsend. This is all based on a true story, by the way. He's in a hearing where one of the kids that he's been teaching is, got into some trouble and is being shipped off to more of a harsher, like court of like juvenile correctional facility. And it's a big kind of a tragedy. So Greg is getting ready to go on a cross-country bike ride, the Tour de Grand, I think.
Keep calling it the Tour de Greg.
Right, because he's been planning this for 10 months. Right. He's got the time off, and he's going to go from Colorado to the Grand Canyon on his bike by himself. Through a series of events, he ends up taking four of these troubled kids with him on this trip. Part of it is a publicity stunt to say, you know, hey, this place needs funding. It's kind of got a bad reputation. Wouldn't it be great if we had a big news story about this? It's these inspirational troubled kids going on the journey of a lifetime thing. And they do. And it's really rough going at the outset because these kids, they come from broken homes and have different kind of criminal records and different degrees of violence and tragedy in their lives. But through this teacher, Greg, they learn to persevere. They learn to go out of their comfort zones, etc., etc. It's a story you've heard a million times, but you've probably never seen it presented quite like this, because all the quote unquote mile markers of these kinds of movies, the moments where something bad is supposed to happen because it's foreshadowed, they go in the other direction. They take the other fork, and I really appreciated that. Now, I don't want to get too spoilery because this is just opening up.
Yeah.
And I want people to go see it, but we can talk a bunch about what's going on in this film. So I'm rambling. I want to know what you think, Pat, of Hard Miles. Well, how did you come to it, and what did you make of it the first time you saw it?
Well, I was introduced to it at the Chicago International. It's produced by some friends of mine, John and Jacqueline Buxbaum, here in Chicago. They're interested in bicycling, and Jackie is part of the Chicago International Film Festival. She sits on the board. So this is the first time they were ever producers for a film, mostly because John is really into biking. So, of course, I'm going to see this at the International because Jackie's a friend and I want to support and all that. And it helped to get the interview with Matt Modine and the production crew and everything like that. But what really got me and what I was really pleased with was the authenticity in the film. These are not characters that are goody-goody or they're going to be redeemed and everything's going to be all right. No, these are guys who are going through their issues. Every single one of them has some underlying issue that they have to deal with. They use the journey as a metaphor toward redemption. Some make it, some don't. You know what I'm saying? It just, and even Greg, who, you know, there's a significant thing happening to him. His father is dying. They're estranged, but it's close by where they're doing the ride. So they keep calling him and saying, you got to come, you got to come, you got to come. And so that's part of the thing that's driving him. And it's authentic. It's about real human beings who have these issues in their lives that you know, cause them to get off the straight and narrow. And how do you get back on the straight and narrow as if to ride a bike straight and narrow, you know? So it's an apt metaphor for the journey of life. I hate to be a cliche, but it's done in an authentic way. And you can really connect to it, I think. I think you can really connect to it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the things I really appreciated, and maybe you know this, I don't, because it's based on a true story. Do you know when he was taking these kids out initially? Because there's the at the end credits, there's the where are they now kind of thing. And they talk about how he's Yeah, the real Greg Townsend is taken. I think they said like thousands of people on these cross-country treks. So I guess he's been doing it for a while. Do you know when this would have started?
Well, I don't know when it started, but what they did, the filmmakers, the co-writers, one's the producer of the film, Christian Sander. The other is the director, RJ Daniel Hanna. And they took the stories of the real Greg and they formulated this. This is a fictional story, but it's based on Greg's truth in him taking these kids out, what they have to deal with, what their circumstances are, what they encountered on the road. I think it's pretty much, it's truth. You know, it's truth made into a story that's palatable for the 90-minute format, or in this case, 100 minutes. So, so that's how they formulated it. And well, I don't know how long he's been doing this. So,
well, what struck me is that it's a movie, you know, even if it's not a period piece, like he could have started doing this in the 90s, but it still feels very contemporary. Right. These feel like modern day kids.
Yeah.
One of the problems you tend to see in modern movies about modern teenagers, because these guys are all like 15, 16, you know, I think the oldest might be 17, right?
Right.
Is technology, right? They all have their phones. They're on their phones. You know, things happen with the technology. There's like virtually no tech.
There's no cell service. There's no cell service.
Well, but that's the thing is like in the juvenile in Ridgeview, the school, I don't think they're allowed to have phones. So you don't see them. When they embark on this journey, they talk about having to use how to learn how to read physical maps because there's no reception for all the places they're going. So, you know, it's at the very end, you know, there is some cell phone usage, but it's mostly the adults because, you know, things happen with these four kids. But it's refreshing to see a movie about the youth, not only how old am I, but not only not using technology, but also going and doing physical things outdoor. Yeah, seriously. but it feels...
Well, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it doesn't just feel like the movies we got a lot of back in like the 1980s, like Stand and Deliver, like Lean on Me, like the lesser seen movie Band of the Hand with Stephen Lang, which is sort of a darker version. Right. But
Nice.
It feels like that, but it's also, it feels like the kind of movie we don't get a whole lot of, especially in kind of mainstream wide releases anymore. And it's just, it feels, it's a feel good movie, but it feels really good because it feels like we haven't had this kind of a push for the so-called message movie in a long time. And to see it make a comeback in as effective a drama as this, I think is great.
Well, that's a real, I think that's a high compliment to the creative team, because that was their goal, essentially. They wanted to, you know, make something of this genre again, but they wanted to make it in a way that was a little more accessible to a modern audience. Like, again, if you're thinking of the typical sports redemption movie, you're thinking of The Big Game, you're thinking of, you know, maybe the last play of The Big Game, you know, all that. And that's going to change everything for the kids who are in the film, going in the sport, or the coach. Well, in this case, because it's a bike ride, there's no big game. It's literally a metaphor for the journey of life, you know, as they're doing this ride. There's no competition in this ride. They are simply riding 762 miles to the Grand Canyon. So, I mean, that's a real spin on this genre.
It is. I mean, but that's the thing, is like it's not a game where there's a score and a clock and everything. Well, there is sort of a clock, because they have to get there with a certain amount of time. However, there are the sort of lessons that you learn in competition, but the competition is against themselves. You know, when they're learning to ride uphill in that vertical mile, and then when Smink, who's one of the kids, he decides to go downhill, and he kind of takes off on his own before Greg can teach them how to go downhill. It leads to, I mean, I was watching this on my laptop, and I was getting like freaked out, like that feeling. Yeah. I felt like I was on the bike with him going down this very steep incline on like a cliff's edge. And it really messed me up for a couple of minutes.
Anybody can relate. If you've ever been on a bicycle and been out of control going downhill, think about that on like a steep grade, you know. It's crazy. That's a very tense and really well done scene.
It is, but it also speaks to, you know, in sports movies, you've got the coach who's trying to teach the kids, you know, how do you hit the goal? How do you make the basket? Whatever. In this, it's more of not only just how to ride the bike. We get the whole thing with the shoes and the clicking into the pedals and all that, but in the specific technique of how to go uphill and how to go downhill, how to pace yourself.
Yeah.
It sounds very dry, but it's very exciting. I never thought of cycling or cyclists in the way of thinking of like a true athlete. You know, we've got Lance Armstrong and the Tour de France and all that stuff. Those are more like pop cultural kind of things, but this movie really makes you appreciate the skill, the artistry, the commitment of cycling, and it's not in a cheesy kind of way. It's wonderful.
Well, you bring up a good point too, because at the level that, like, for example, Greg, who is their guide and their teacher and their mentor, the level he's at, it's basically to give himself therapy for some problems he has as a child, which they flash back to occasionally. But the people who do that kind of sport riding are as athletic as the people on the Tour de France level. But the Tour de France, of course, is the same as being the club champion at a golf course and then playing the Masters. Both of those entities are really good, and both you could qualify as athletes and zero handicap golfers, but you know, there are differences. So, but on the bicycle level, anybody can bike ride, anybody can know how to bike ride who's been on a bike and can get into the kind of athletic shape that we see in the movie. And of course the kids, you know, they have boundless energy. Just because of their age, damn them.
they have boundless energy and massive egos, which I felt was really authentic to, you know, the teenagers. Yeah. Because I'm raising one right now, but no, it's great, because when they leave Ridgeview for the first time, you know, they are all suited up in their kind of their slender, you know, bike riding gear. But there's the one kid, who comes out, and he's not going to have any of it. He's just in his street clothes. He says, oh, you guys all look ridiculous. And so two of the other guys say, well, let's just put our shirts on, our street clothes on over these. And Greg is like, you're not going to want to do that, because you're going to be, it's going to create resistance and it's going to make it a lot harder. And they don't listen. And eventually they find out, but some of them are so prideful that they're not going to give an inch for like 2 days. And then finally they kind of fall in line, I guess. But it that authenticity is right there. I didn't feel like I was watching the machinations of a screenplay.
Yeah. And you have to have the right equipment to do a ride like this. So the audience gets to get in on that as well as the kids are participating. So, the only other bike movie, of course, we think of immediately, I think, is Breaking Away. But there's been other bike movies in the film history. The titles are not coming into my mind yet. But, I'm saying this is just, I put this in the cycling genre, which, is about a half dozen films in history that you can access that were, theatrical releases. And of course, probably Breaking Away being but American Flyer, there's one, American Flyer with Kevin Bacon. It's a genre we've seen before, but we haven't seen it done like this with kickstand and deliver, if I can steal your joke immediately, because that's a damn good joke.
Thank you.
but we have the side issue with Modine's character, because his father is dying. Now we both have had that happen to us, and without giving away what happens with him, I wanted to ask you how would you play a scene with a dying father differently than what happened in reality?
No, I mean, this was another, I would not have played it differently, because it is beautifully acted and it's perfectly written. And again,
I'm not talking
about
Greg, I'm talking about you and your interaction with your father as he was passing away. I'm talking about how you reacted to it.
Well, I found out after the fact.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, this movie got to me on a number of levels. And I think part of my reaction to it is because I think it's a very fine film, but also because it was oddly specific in the buttons it pushed with me. Because my father, for a good portion of his adult life, worked in the system, worked with mostly adults, but like teaching, convicts basic skills. And he was in schools and institutions like this. And then in the last couple years that he was around, we didn't talk. And I found out after he was dead that he had had cancer. And then in order to outrun the cancer, he killed himself. So it's all good. So I'm watching this movie. I'm like, this is awesome. This is firing on all cylinders here. But
certainly had the same type of relationship with his father in the film as you are describing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very.
I didn't know all the details. I apologize for having asked that. Okay.
I'm an open book. I mean, I'm also
obviously.
There's always a part of my brain that's on the couch, so to speak. So I'm processing 24/7.
Go ahead.
Well, no, but what I'm watching this moment where, spoiler alert, Greg does eventually go to see his father on this journey, and what he encounters is a very. Yeah. Right, but what he encounters is very different from, and this is all I'll say, very different from the perception of his dad that we had seen in the little bits of flashback we get throughout the film, and the reactions of the staff at the hospital to Greg's father, very different. So when they have this final scene that we've seen a billion times in movies, you know what to expect, like, Dad, you always did me wrong. And the dad's gonna be like, oh, but I pushed you because I loved you, but maybe I didn't do it right.
Right.
Again, I'm not gonna say what happens, but that doesn't happen. Yeah. And what we do see felt like it was ripped from, I don't know if it was from Greg Townsend's life or it's the imagination of the screenwriters, but you know, bravo, because it felt like the most real version of that scene that you could have. Not Hollywood at all.
That's beautiful, man. And then again, it, you know, Ian is sharing something with the listeners of this podcast that I'm really touched about. So I'm glad you were able to share that. I only brought up that question because I had the same situation with my father on his deathbed, quote unquote. You kind of imagine that you're going to have some sort of scene because all you've been seeing are these Hollywood movies and these scenes over the years, you know, and it's not like that. It just isn't. You know, when somebody is suffering, they don't really feel like talking, you know, especially talking about big issues. Now, the one thing I'll say about my dad, who is a lifelong Catholic, is that he had some doubts as he was going down the last mile. As he was taking the last lap around the track, he was saying, man, what's going to happen when I cross this finish line? I'm really questioning it. And this is a guy who had never questioned his faith that I knew of, but maybe he personally had that inside him and just let it come out because of that. So that there's nothing I would change because I realize that the authentic nature of somebody who is suffering while he is passing is not to talk that much. Right. Same with my brother. So, you know, it really does give you a sense of what mortality means. And I think, again, this film gives us a real glimpse into what that means. So let's talk a little about Smink, because Smink is, you know, that's a funny character name. But also he is suffering from an eating disorder, which you never see in a male, you know.
Right.
You know, depicted on film. We've seen several movies about bulimia and anorexia having to do with females, but not necessarily as directly as they did in this one. And they went for it right on. They didn't shy away from it. I was really impressed with that. When you have a character like Smink, you're expecting, I don't know, you know, some hijinks or something, but Smink was pretty darn serious about a character.
Well, I mean, they've got a very, you know, I'll say it, but I hate using this term because it's so cliche, but they have a very diverse cast of these four boys. They've got a black kid, a Hispanic kid, Smink's the white kid, and they've got this one guy, Rice, who I think is supposed to be Jewish or something, but they don't make an issue.
Hispanic too. Okay, go ahead.
He's
just a burly guy. He's a burly guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But one of the other things I loved about this movie is that it is, I think, what I'll call diversity done right, which is they're just presented as characters and it's not a giant oppression narrative. It's not like a race war or anything going on. They just don't get along because they're teenagers who all have attitude on each other. But and with the biggest thing
Go ahead. Oh, I was just saying the biggest thing they have in common is they know they're from the other side of the tracks and they have suffered for the sin of being from the other side of the tracks, to put in a broad term, you know. They both, obviously, they both all have some sort of, well, Smink's problem is he doesn't eat, and we can't even imagine what kind of situation that causes something like that. But they do have flashbacks as they're taking their own journey, as we see that thing with the egg, which I thought was really interesting.
The thing, there's so much I love about this movie and those flashbacks, because there is a montage in the middle of the journey where we get to see flashes of each kid, and it gets kind of jumbled up because it's almost impressionistic as far as, who are we watching? Where are they? Are those police lights? What's going on with this egg? So, but what we don't get is a 5-minute soliloquy about, like, my parents didn't love me and they broke up. And so I went and ran with the law. We get like a couple of bits of stories of like their neighborhood life, but it's not a sob story and we don't have everything handed to us. That thing with the egg is a perfect example. I know that that is associated with Smink's eating disorder in some fashion,
right.
but we're never right. quite sure what that meant. It's kind of messed up. And you imagine that that's contributing to, you know, whatever is going on in his head. But what I want to talk about Smink for a second
that's
is
right.
he looks like the kid who's, you know, the serial killer in waiting, or he likes to plant, you know, explosives in places or something like that. But no, he's just like a weird, sensitive kid who doesn't eat. And yeah, he ends yeah. up, you know, and he wants to fit in. He's not afraid of these other kids, which you might kind of expect. He kind of holds his own. There's a great scene where all four boys are sort of sleeping out under the stars, and it's a real bonding moment, even though it starts off kind of, you know, mm-hmm. tense with them. But yeah, the word I keep coming back to is authenticity, because I don't know who these actors are. I think uniformly they're all great. But I wasn't distracted by, oh, this is a name, you know, actor who's been in a ton of like TV shows or something like this. Who knows? They might be, because I'm really old, but they all felt like real people.
Well, there were familiar actors in it. The gentleman from The Office. Do you have a cast list in front of you?
Leslie David Baker. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He was great as the officious head of the Ridgeway house. And then the woman Hattie, also a really character actress with many, many parts. I can't reference anything specifically, but I was looking at her IMDb page and she's done a ton of stuff. But
yeah, she's an actress named Cynthia K. McWilliams.
Yes.
And it's frustrating because I feel like I've seen her. But I looked at her credits and I don't think I've seen anything she's been in. So I don't know how I was watching like. Right. I'm like, how do I know this person? But no, she was great. She plays a coworker of Greg's at Ridgeview, who sort of gets roped into driving what's called the SAG van. It's like a giant van of equipment and food and water right. and stuff, because they have to have someone following these kids on this like 700 plus mile journey to make sure nothing happens. And she goes along with them. She provides kind of guidance. She's like kind of a therapist and den mother of sorts. But she also won't put up with a lot of crap. And, you know, she is the balance to Matthew Modine's character, who's
right.
troubled, alternately sensitive, but also very irascible, because you get the feeling that he doesn't quite understand why these troubled teens can't just be adults. And that's
part of his
life learning. Yeah,
he makes a lot of mistakes because his own angst is kind of being manifested through some of the issues they're having on the journey. And the one thing I wanted to say about Smink, because I had to look up the name, but if you see the movie Breaking Away, his character is Daniel Stern. You know, if they're doing like a Breakaway parallel, because they're both skinny guys and they're both like look ridiculous on a bike, but they really have determination. And Smink is definitely one of my favorite characters in the entire film. So I just wanted to point that out because I remember that from Breaking Away.
Well, there's also Jakeen Guillory, who plays Woolbright. He's the one that I mentioned. He came out wearing street clothes and everyone else is in their cycling duds. He's the kid who's, you know, destined to be kind of the leader if he can just kind of pull his head out of his own butt. And again, there's a scene towards the end of the movie, like as we're, you know, it's the big kind of leading into the third act crisis where
right.
the team kind of gets broken up and you have an idea of where this kid is going, because not necessarily everyone can make it in a story like this. And like, well, I've seen this. They did it in Lean on Me. Right. Yeah. They did it in Lean on Me. But yeah, it's a very different approach to way they handle these characters and wonderful performances, I think, all the way across the board.
I mean, I believe every single one of them, the authenticity was there. I mean, stories sometimes, plots sometimes, you know, kind of get in the way of how some of these characters can express their authenticity, but we don't see that in this film at all. We do not. And I was pleased about that.
Well, one thing I'd like to do is for those out there who, no, well, first of all, go see this movie. See it on the big screen. Yeah. Don't wait for VOD. I watched this on my laptop, and I still got that vertigo feeling of that downhill cycling right. bit. I can only imagine what it's like in the big screen. But this isn't a sports movie, but it is in that inspirational genre. And there have been a few other examples that I've seen recently in the last few years that I've loved. Maybe I'm just a softie for this stuff. I don't know. But one was a movie called, there was a movie from a few years ago called Blue Miracle, which was about, you know, Dennis Quaid played this crusty old sea captain. There was a teacher who got his students on board to go out on this Marlin competition. And then there was a movie called Radical from last year with the Eugenio Derbez that was great.
I wanted to see that. I love Eugenio Derbez. I really do. I think he's just great.
He is, and he's wonderful in this dramatic role. And again, that's a student or a teacher who comes to this small town in Mexico, and these are like junior high kids, if that, and they're equally troubled because of a lot of stuff that's going on in the surrounding area. But this Hard Miles slots right into that. I mean, you could have a feel good triple feature with all these movies.
Well, let me ask you one thing too: which redemptive experience did you connect to the most of, you know, the five writers? Is it five or six?
It's five writers and one person in the truck.
Okay, very good. All right. So which of the writer redemptions did you particularly enjoy?
Because we didn't get a full backstory on where all the kids were coming from. Okay. I don't know that I felt like they needed to be redeemed. I felt like Greg was finding them like 2 weeks before they would have done something that they would have had to have been redeemed from. You know, they're good kids. They're troubled kids. They ended up in this school, but if they had ended up back on the street or another institution, they could have gotten into larger trouble.
So you think they were picked for a purpose? Like they were picked in the context of the story, they were chosen from the school because they needed this ride the most.
I'm not sure that's a detail that I kind of missed or glossed over at the beginning, like why these four, except for the fact that they were in Greg's
in his
auto shop his shop class. And that's, mm-hmm. that's a fascinating scene too, with them using mm-hmm. these tools and there's a triangle, and like, what do you see? And I won't say what they see, but it's pretty obvious if you know what the movie's about. I appreciate a teacher using compassion, imagination, and innovation to try and reach these kids. And you kind of see some inklings of that when they're in the school, in the shop class with them. But then when they go on the road, they revert back to, well, hey, we've kind of got our freedom now. We can trash talk. We can do whatever. It's a bit looser. So it takes time for him. He has to try and reach them all over again. So it's not just you start out from point A and go to Z. You go to A to D, then back to A again, and then get up to K, and then maybe you have to go back to C, and, you know.
Right. Well, that's a good way of putting it. I felt like there was a real redemption in finding a crew. You know, finding a crew is the theme of so many movies. But in this one, it really was about, because they were all going through the same thing, they were all torturing their bodies, they were all, you know, wanting to see the sights and et cetera, and they're all camping out together. I thought the redemptive quality was mostly about coming together, you know, even momentarily, as, you know, we're going through the same thing together, and I feel your pain, and I feel your pain, I feel your pain. We're a crew.
This movie is not only fun and moving, but it's also educational, because when he's talking about going out on a bike and what the bike represents and what the group of riders represents, everyone has their own function. We find out what the hell Peloton means. I thought it was just the name for like a rich asshole family, but no,
which is mentioned in the movie.
Right. But Peloton means platoon. And the root word of that, I think, comes to like little ball or something like that. So yeah, they learn how to form one body going, you know, on this journey. Right. Which, to go back to, right, to, you know, your story about your dad being a Catholic, I mean, if you want to look for a spiritual meaning in this movie, I think it's there.
It is there.
But
suffering.
Yeah. Suffering on the way up. Perseverance.
Right.
Oh yeah, going up to the hill. Yeah. We talked about that last month.
Yeah, yes, we did. You saw our Passion of the Christ episode.
Yeah.
Boy, did I get feedback on that, by the way.
good, bad, or ugly.
From people who said, oh, finally you've seen it.
Okay.
When I talked to our RJ Daniel Hanna, his philosophy as a storyteller is to be a universalist, meaning that he wants the universal human experience. He wants the characters that you can have empathy toward, and they're pushing the empathy back so that you can understand, you know, maybe my problem isn't as broad or grand as some of them, but I've been there. I've done that. You know what I'm saying? So I was impressed by his manner of morality in the film, I guess, if you want to call it, if the film has a moral center. So,
there's a great scene where, and there are variations on this scene throughout the movie, which I thought was frustrating, but also felt very real, of the moment something doesn't go according to plan, the instinct is, oh, this trip is stupid. Let's get out of here. Let's try and escape, whatever. So they all have to be kind of like, everybody, including Greg, has to be kind of corralled back on track. And at one point, I think it was Woolbright starts chastising Greg, you know, like, what do you know about my life? You know, you don't know people like me. Have you ever kept in touch with people who left the program, whatever? And we know, because of our benefit of the flashbacks, that Greg has had a terrible, tumultuous life. He's got a brother who constantly calls him to say, hey, go check in on dad, without giving it away. We get the sense that his brother is also in a very interesting situation.
Yeah, he's had a difficult road.
Right. But instead of Greg coming back to Woolbright and saying, you know, well, my dad was abusive and all this other stuff, he's trying to tell him, I've had a rough life too. But because he has that same bullish pig-headedness as the kids that he's working with, they can't communicate with each other. It's not a perfect, tidy scene, where we've seen that in other movies.
Right. And again, that it's refreshing, because it just makes the smaller victories that much more victorious. And I think, you know, that's something you can get out of a film without having to have the grand scene, you know, the last play or the big game or anything like that. The whole thing's a big game, and the whole thing, the plays that they do within this big game contribute to the whole feeling of what happens to all the characters. So I'm so glad. I love your perspective on this film. I love it. I'm overwhelmed with how much that you brought to the table on this. It's beautiful, man. Seriously.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you. And thank you for recommending it to me. It also reminded me of another movie from 92, I think, called Grand Canyon. Did you see that one?
Yes, that's a very odd film. Very odd film. Yes. I need a revisit on that. Is that an anniversary film we could put down the line for? No, it's from 92. Damn.
We could still talk about it. It doesn't have to be an anniversary.
Well, we started a theme and we're trying to
but hey, we're breaking the theme now. We are supposed to talk every other month, Pat. This is, you know, we're doing something different. I was actually thinking about
Grand
Canyon.
No theme.
Right. Well, I was thinking about Grand Canyon a few months ago. I'm like, it's been a while since I've seen it, but not only because. But it's a, you know, a group, disparate groups of people, and there's a kind of a journey to the Grand Canyon at the end, and it's all about like how small people feel and how small their problems are, and we get some of that towards the end of this film. But again, with the photography, it's a cliche to say you go to the Grand Canyon and you feel really small in comparison to the vastness of this, you know, of the world, of the universe. But the way this movie is shot, you know, towards the end, you really do feel it. And that's one of the reasons, in addition to that downhill bike riding scene, that I'm saying you have to see this on a big screen.
Right. Well, also, I wanted to say, if you are a bicyclist who does adventure journeys like this, I think you're going to be very happy with the way that they honestly depict these people riding their bikes through this situation. In the circumstance where you have a guy who knows everything about it and four people who don't know anything about it, but they're going to go through the same, you know, permutations of the journey. And I think if you're a bicyclist who have done something like that, you totally understand. So good for the expert, good for the amateur, as they say.
I like that. I have to ding this movie once. Okay. One thing. All right. That fair stood enough. Out, and I almost spit out my coffee when I heard it. At one point, we find out that Greg's father's name is Robert. Robert mm-hmm. Townsend, the writer-director right. of Hollywood Shuffle.
could have been a great tribute.
It would be funny if he'd gone to the hospital room and it was actually Robert Townsend.
It was actually Robert Townsend playing his father. There you go, Ian. I think you're casting, but anyway.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. But,
I think I lost my thread about what I was going to say in association with that. But no, it's no biggie. It occurred to me too. I think it occurred to everybody. I think RJ and Christian couldn't help it. We got to name him Robert.
Now, briefly, and I'm going to link down below. You talked to the filmmakers and you talked to Matthew Modine. Without spoiling what you talked about and everything, what was the vibe or what was kind of your takeaway about talking to them about the movie?
Well, I love Matthew Modine as a pure actor. I think he puts a spin on his characters that no other actor in Hollywood does. I mean, he is uniquely his own kind of workhorse when it comes to creating character. So I was fascinated with how he creates a character who is flawed, essentially, and his flaw has to do with the journey that he's on, right? That his bike ride and his father's in hospice is happening at the same time. And he seems to be journeying both in the biking sense and towards that final confrontation. So I'm fascinated with how somebody like Modine would handle that. So not to get, you know, again, talking about acting is like dancing about architecture, but when you have a craftsman like Modine, you do want to go deep in the weeds about that. And of course, I had to ask him something about the great Stanley Kubrick, because everybody who's a filmista is obsessed with the fact that Stanley Kubrick once lived and once made films, and here's a man who worked directly with him, and he gives a hell of an answer, man. You gotta hear it.
You sent me this like right before we came on, so I'm right. gonna listen with great interest, and folks, you should definitely do that too. One of the things I thought was kind of fun was Sean Astin is also in the movie.
Yes,
right at the front.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Well, it's
Speedy.
Speedy, yes, the owner of the bicycle shop. He's in the movie for all of like 5 minutes, but they're five, you know, really fun minutes. And also, there's that weird connection where I thought, have Sean Astin and Matthew Modine ever done anything together? Yes, they were in Stranger Things. I totally,
right?
Yeah,
right.
But Sean Astin, the fact that he's in this movie also recalled a favorite movie of mine from my childhood, The Goonies. And it's about, you know, these kids who are going on this journey that starts off on a bike ride, but they're going on this adventure in that case, they're trying to find, you know, wealth in order to save their families. But in this case, it's still about a bunch of misfits who don't quite fit in, and they kind of bicker with each other. But they learn a lot about themselves on the journey. They're two different movies, but they are in a weird way of a piece. And I think that's one of the things that another reason I felt this movie was sort of a throwback to the kinds of movies we got a lot more of back in a time, I think we could use more of these non-blockbuster, non-cynical, feel-good movies. They call them feel-good movies for a reason. You go in, you come out, and you feel good. You feel optimistic. You feel hopeful. I think we can use that, as they say, now more than ever.
Well, I think RJ Daniel Hand is your man. Christian Slater was the co-writer. But
Not Christian Slater.
Christian Slater. Christian Sanders. I almost wrote that in my piece, too. So
also, that would have been amazing.
Sander, not Sanders. And I looked at my piece yesterday and I had the S a couple times through the article. So not Slater. But anyway.
You're correcting the record here. Yep.
Those are guys who want to work in that genre. They want to work in human stories of empathy and, you know, redemption in this case. But wow, you know, I mean, it's sensational that we're able to have an agreement on this, because I was really blown away when I first saw it. So it's really good to talk to somebody about it who otherwise wasn't involved in the film. So,
well, one thing I want to do mention to people out there, yes, who are thinking about going to see this, but maybe you're on the fence because we're talking it up. We're saying it's a feel good movie.
Right.
It is, but it's also not corny. And I'm surprised this thing got a PG-13 rating, because, again, old man coming out here,
the language is pretty rough.
Right. Because these are authentic, you know, street tough teenagers dealing with each other. And I thought the PG-13 only allowed you one F-bomb. There are 2.5 in this movie.
I think you have to apply if there's more than one, and then it's all context. As you recall, one of them is a truncated, like he's starting to stop himself by saying it.
And, that was right, Hattie when she was in the truck. Yeah. Yeah. That was the half. Yeah.
That's the half one. No, but you're right. Well, that was, again, RJ Daniel Hanna said to me that they wanted to make sure, you know, they wanted the PG. They really did. You know, they had this, they were looking for PG, but they got PG-13. That's fine. The point is, he was saying, I couldn't have it authentic unless they were talking in the vernacular. So that's how that evolved, you know. He had his script, of course, but the kids are going to talk their natural talk. So eventually that became part of the actual dialogue. I mean, not changing the story, but the dialogue was, you know, centered into their vernacular. And you know, like you were saying, the thing with the cell phones, the cell service was very clever. You know, that doesn't have to be a device now, until it has to be, which it happens. So anything else that you wanted to point out that you were thinking of? Because I'm really, really pleased that I was able to introduce this film to you and that you reacted the way you did. So it's really good for everybody involved, the creative team, and also the potential audience, because you can go out and see something a little different, right?
It's a hard movie to describe, because it's one in a genre that you've seen dozens of times, especially if you're of a certain age when these were a lot more ubiquitous. But on the other hand, it feels like the people who made this also grew up with those movies and knew exactly how to play with those tropes and get around them. So it feels like it feels very new and very fresh. So no other thoughts except, you know, go see it, everybody out there, and spread the word. I feel like this is something that you could have your most cynical, cross-armed, I'm not going to watch a stupid bicycle movie about troubled teens friend and have them come out being like, I want to take up cycling now and maybe help some.
Yes, that's definitely what will happen. Oh, I just wanted to end too with a little anecdote about Passion of the Christ. So I told my mother about seeing Passion of the Christ for the first time and the story of being, you know, so reluctant before. And she goes to bed fairly early, but she has a TV in her room. She goes, could you help me get Passion of the Christ on one of my apps? So I went in, and there it was. And we clicked it and she watched it. So there you go.
Before she went to bed?
Catholic mother. before she went, as she was going to sleep. So I don't know if she watched the whole thing or not, but isn't that wild?
Yes.
That whole thing, the whole thing is just kind of crazy. And, you know, the timing was right for it. So bring it on, as they say, just like those.
Yeah.
Bikers.
Well,
yes. And congratulations, well, to congratulations to Jackie and John Buxbaum for producing this and giving us the opportunity to see it beforehand. So there you go.
Yes,
go
definitely.
Go and see it. Right. Go and see it.
Yeah, folks out there, make this movie at least a modest hit, but make it a surprise hit at the box office, because this is,
wow,
this thing deserves headlines. Yeah. But
it's
yeah,
in your Pat hands. McDonald is,
yes, it's like the handlebars. All right.
Ride.
Pat McDonald of what's it? Oh, Smink, yes. And what do we say as we're on the bike? We say ho. Yeah.
Ho.
Yeah.
We'll end with a good ho on three. Or do you
I gotta outro you first, Pat. We can't end without outroing you. Pat McDonald, HollywoodChicago.com. Oh, thank you very much for recommending this to me and talking to me about it. And also for sharing the interviews you did with the filmmakers and the legendary Matthew Modine, which you can find out there, find down below, along with all of Pat's info. So thank you for watching this. If you like this episode, like, subscribe, ring the bell for notifications, support Pat. And until next time, whenever that is, whatever that is, thank you. Take care. And on three, one, two, three, ho!
Ho!
I hope that didn't blow anyone's ears out, but, you know.